This is To Catch a Con Man, Season 2, in the Victim's Voices. I will take you on another fascinating journey, but this time you will hear from other men and women that, like me, have fallen prey to the various cons, scams, and deceits by one of the most prolific and successful con artists to live and operate in the Midwest. You know him as Ricky Dugo.
Could $100,000 sustain my life? It couldn't even come close. So listen to me. If I was going to be in some sort of con, scam, conniving thing, it'd be for millions. It wouldn't be for $100,000.
To Catch a Con Man is brought to you by Studio 847 in Long Grove, Illinois. Listener discretion is advised, as some of this programming contains language and content that might be offensive to some listeners.
Join me on this adventure to catch a con man. This is Adam Albin. On this last and final episode of To Catch a Con Man, we will hear Paige's firsthand account of what she heard and saw while working for the Dugos over the summer of 2016. And make sure you listen until the very end for new updates on where the Dugos are now.
Okay, so one odd behavior that really struck me when I was watching the kids was that they were not, like, the little two, the ones that belong to Rick and Shannon, they were not up to be apologetic about anything. Like, they were not to be sorry for anything. So I think one time toward the beginning of the summer, one of them, like, punched another one in the head or something, as kids do, and one of them was crying. And I was like, you need to say sorry. And then she's like, no, we don't do that. We don't. I'm like, you don't say sorry for hitting somebody in the face, you know? And she's like, no, like, it's okay. They're little. Like, they're old enough to know, you know, that's not good. But it really seemed like Rick was kind of, like, grooming them to not feel remorse for things, the two little ones. So, like, one time I remember we were making cookies or something, and Rick happened to be there, and he had obviously, like, the newest and fanciest of everything. He had, like, a brand new iPhone that he just got, like, a week ago, and one of the little kids, like, dropped it in the bowl of batter or something. And Rick's like, no, it's okay, it's all right. And the kid goes, yeah, no, I don't feel bad. And he's like, no, you should never feel bad about anything. Like, you should never. So, like, I could just see some of those behaviors that he was kind of teaching to them. And I was just like, what parent does that? You know, what good parent, the ones to raise their kids in good conscience, doesn't encourage them to own up to their mistakes and, you know, be kind to other people? And anyway, that's just something that I literally just thought about, that, yeah, with his two kids, he did not want them apologizing for anything. He didn't want them to ever feel bad for anything they did. And honestly, I don't think they were old enough to where that was, like, a big part of their personality, because they're really sweet to me and they're really sweet to their siblings for, you know, the most part. But yeah, that's one additional thing that crossed my mind.
Yeah, that's the sociopathic parent in Rick Dugo that comes out. Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Did you ever hear him, like, on any phone calls? Did you ever hear or see him pitching, you know, people at the house? I mean, are those things, were you in, like, a different, were you isolated from when he was around other adults? You know, it sounds like they kind of had you, you know, caged off in, like, a whole different area, and, like, you were responsible for children, obviously, and not eavesdropping. But did you ever get a feel like he was pitching?
Well, now looking back, I'm like, that's probably what he was doing. He was always like on business calls, very important business calls. So he answered the phone and he always was like, he always called everybody man or buddy. Hey man, what's going on, man? Or hey buddy. And then his big thing, when you could tell he was really like getting into, he had the gift of the gab on the phone. He'd start saying, oh, I get it. And that's when he knew he was about to like make some kind of like proposition, like he was trying to close something. I never heard details like, I'll get you this many TVs for this or anything like that, but you could tell that's what he was doing on the phone when he was talking to people. Like, and then they had several of the couples by to the house before they went out on the boat, because a lot of the times I'd be watching the other couple's kids too, you know. So a few times these couples would come by and I'd be like, oh, so how do you know so-and-so? And they'd be like, oh, we met him at the gym and we're going out on the boat. And then Rick would say something like, yeah, we'll chat more this afternoon or something like that. Like, we'll chat more. And they go out to dinner at the restaurant that was down the road by the marina. And I know they'd go on the boat and then take them there and, you know, quote unquote, chat more. So I heard bits and pieces. At the time, I didn't think a whole lot about it other than that he was just kind of douchebag. But yeah, that, like, what was really weird was his, this woman, she's probably like early mid 30s. And she went out with him one time. And I was like, oh, is this an old family friend? And they're like, oh, she's actually our babysitter in Chicago for a long time. And then she got a great job. And now, you know, we're friends. And we're taking her out on the boat. And she's down here for the weekend with her boyfriend. And so I'm like, you know, now I realize they were scamming their old babysitter probably. And it's just such a weird situation.
Do you remember her name by chance?
The name of the old babysitter?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. I think I only met her one time. Mm. But yeah, she's probably early mid-30s, like light brown hair, kind of tan. Really, really nice, really attractive. I can't tell you her name, though.
Yeah. I think who you're, again, I'm going to throw a dart in the dark, but based on timeline and they had a babysitter. That's been involved in a lot of interesting things, we'll call it, with cars and houses, introducing Rick to other friends of hers, sorority sisters from college that Rick has also scammed. So I'm thinking it's probably Amy, I call her Amy Lebowski. She has a different real last name, but that would be my guess.
Amy sounds right, actually.
Yeah, I think after we're done, I'll send you a picture of her, and maybe you can confirm.
Don't take that as gospel until I see the picture, but that does sound very familiar.
Yeah, because that babysitter, she's had 3 or 4 houses in her name, 4 or 5 cars in her name. She introduced Rick to that... one of her sorority sisters up in Indiana. Rick took that family for a couple cars and a bunch of furniture. So it just kind of like it makes you wonder, like, like how does that happen? And what's even more interesting? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you go.
No.
Okay, I will say toward the beginning, you know, kind of the get to know you talk when they're like, kind of, what are your credentials, what's your background, where are you from, you know, they ask what your family do, and which is normal, but I mean, he got into details, like, you know, what's your dad do? Oh, well, how big's his operation? Oh, well, you know, XYZ. And so he was really digging for, it seemed more than just like a polite interest, you know, making conversation. It was kind of like sizing me up in a way. I don't know. He knew I wasn't a good target. I was there working for them. But I think he was trying to kind of sussing out the people around me a little bit.
For like, sure.
You know, where's your family based? What do they do? Oh, they have a lake house. Like, they must do pretty well. I don't know. He could have just been making conversation, but I had a it was a weird feeling when he started asking about square footage of things and numbers and just very detailed things that you don't talk money with people like that on the first time you meet them. or the fifth or sixth time, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah.
But okay, so like when you take a step back, he's a sociopath. He lacks empathy and understanding of basic things, and you know, that most people, you know, possess. And in that moment, what you don't know is that he's sizing you up, like you said, and he's determining if there's an opportunity for him to dig in over time, potentially ask you if there's an opportunity to talk to your dad or your brother or your mom or your cousin, because that's how he would network. That's how he gets in.
And he doesn't working.
Yeah. And he doesn't forget it. He has quite a memory. And if he finds that there's an opportunity, or he knows that you come from money, or if your family has anything, you're going to be viewed in his eyes as a potential windfall target. And that's sad, because again, you don't know this at the time. It may be odd that he's asking these questions, and you may think it's some weird small talk, but there's a reason that he asked you all of those questions. And it was to find out whether you would be a fruitful enterprise for him to go after. Now,
sure.
That could have been towards the tail end of after they've used you, or, you know, after you've worked for them for the summer, he would have probably pitched that towards the end. But yeah, it's definitely something, you know, you may look back as odd, but there was definitely a reason behind it. And it was, he was casing you. I mean, it's plain and simple.
Sure. Profile, yeah. I mean, in sales, like, warm leads are way better than cold leads. Like, if you have any type of connection or end, that's obviously the way you want to go. And who knows? It might have gotten hairy if I would have been with them longer. I got a job offer down there at the lake in late July is when I started. I still watched the kids on the weekends and finished out the summer with them. So I think I watched them through like early, you know, probably through like Labor Day-ish, you know, September. But then from my understanding, and I know the guy who runs the restaurant, I used to work for him down the road, where the Dugas frequented all the time. From what I understand, he got kicked out of there. Like, and first there, then like the boat center, then like pretty much like effectively banned from the lake that fall, and they hightailed it out of town. But if I were still around, you know, the next summer or whatever, who knows what could have happened. I did see like on the Facebook post that the guy from the lake, the tattoo artist posted, excuse me, about, you know, this guy stole 10 grand from me as my life savings, and all these people started coming out of the woodwork. And actually the man who rented this beautiful house to them down there commented on it and said, yeah, these guys, they kept coming up with excuses all summer not to pay the rent. I think I got like the first month's rent, and then they basically were squatting there for 4 or 5 months. And Rick was super friendly guy and approached me like halfway through the summer about a business opportunity. And I told him like, absolutely not. I'm not doing any type of thing like that. And then Rick was just like an asshole to me after that, and didn't really hear from him again. And then when I finally threatened to like evict them or send the police out there to the house, or I guess they just packed all their stuff up in the middle of the night and just left the lake and never came back. So
yeah, was
it was tucked into the summer.
Yeah. I know the landlord. I've communicated on Messenger with the landlord. I definitely know that there was a struggle there. Obviously, they didn't pay rent, and they were, I think, out about $30,000. So technically, you know, that landlord is a victim, because that's money that they obviously weren't able to recoup. And it probably wasn't worth them going through a formal eviction process and putting judgments, you know, onto record, because that costs money as well. So if I heard you right, it's 2016, end of summer, early fall, and you think that they basically burned too many bridges and hightailed it back to Chicago, because that's about right. I mean, it actually is very right in that that's about when Russell's post is out there. It's about a similar time frame that he's renting a house up here. His main house would have been in Vernon Hills, Illinois. It's Faraz's house.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it kind of just, it all makes a lot of sense. So,
was that the house there? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, keep up. Go ahead.
Was that the Chicago Bears coach's house?
No, that was about 2.5-3 years later. Dick Duran's house that was rented out in Amy's name, and Dick Duran was out, you know, $30,000+ as well, which is nuts as well. So, so after you're done sitting for them that summer, I mean, do you ever hear from the Dugos again?
One time. So obviously I got really attached to those kids that summer. You know, we spent literally hundreds of hours together. You know, and I thought about them a lot after they left town, cause it was just so sudden. So I was worried about them. And so I think I knew Shannon was due in like December. So I had texted her sometime in the fall and asked how her pregnancy was going and how the kids were and how the baby was. And then she sent me like a newborn photo of the baby when she was born in December. And I think that's the last I ever talked to her. I was like, oh, that's, you know, congratulations. She, you know, baby's beautiful. And I think I even offered, you know, I was like, well, I have a job, like a full-time job now, but if you guys ever need any help on the week, you know, the odd weekend in the summer, I'll be around next summer. And I don't even know if I got a text back from that, which wasn't normal. Normally she'd be like, oh yeah, like she'd jump that. But yeah, I think that was it. I think I was like one or two texts in the fall and the winter of 16, and you know, that baby picture. And then yeah.
So in that fall to winter, had you heard anything from other people at the lake? Were was there like rumblings that something was going on?
I'm really trying to rack my brain about when I first heard about it. I want to say it might have been like the following spring or something. Yeah, I don't know. I do know that, like I said earlier, a little while after they left, I just thought it was really strange that they just picked up and left. So I would, like, periodically Google Rick Shannon Dugo Vernon Hills to see what was going on. And maybe that's how I found the case about the essentially stolen cigarette boat or something online. I think Mom and I went down a rabbit hole one day together. Like, we were just like, oh, did you see this? Did you see this Facebook post? Did you see this? And then I would ask, you know, people around the lake. I mean, the lake, despite being full of a lot of out-of-towners during the summer, like, the people who live there, it's a very small, tight-knit community. Like, word gets around real fast. So I think, like, you know, once these like restaurant owners and people like that, the guys at the marina, I mean, he's probably not paying his rent for his slip and all kinds of stuff, you know? So I think once they got his number, then everybody probably knew, like, look out for this guy. And he wasn't exactly like, didn't exactly blend in with the crowd. You know, it's once you see him, you know who it is.
Yeah.
So yeah,
sticks out like a sore thumb.
Once word got around. Yeah.
So you do some digging with your mom. You know, you find out that there's this old case with a cigarette boat. You know, people are talking. But then you don't hear anything for a long time, right? I mean, obviously, there's, you know, some of the stuff that's on the dirty, and then that gets taken down when the dirty basically goes, you know, it basically folds. How did you come upon the podcast?
Yeah, so, I didn't mention before the podcast. I think what really made me put all the pieces together was they had mentioned the car wash they had in, I've only seen it written, is it Mundelein?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I Googled, like, you know, Google car wash Mundelein, and like these Google reviews came up, and like two or three of them were like, this dude stole $8,000 from me, and this guy, da da da. I was like, oh no, like this is real. So I think maybe that seeing like that, and people commenting on his business pages, is really when I kind of had like put all the pieces together from the stories I was hearing. I was like, oh, he's doing this. He's not just ripping off some people at the lake. He's like a career man, you know? So anyway, yeah, I just thought about that. But the podcast, so I was actually, I didn't discover it until like a week or two ago. I was on a road trip home with some friends, and it just came up in conversation, like, whatever, you know that crazy summer you had at the lake, da 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 da, and the guy is like, oh yeah. I was like, I Google them every now and then, because now I know that there's like the news is on it, and he's going to court, and like I know there's all this stuff. So every now and then I just do a little do-go catch-up sesh, you know, if you will. some light reading. So I just Googled it, and the car was like, I don't really know. It's been a while since I checked in on that whole situation. So like, I think the first thing I saw was like CBS Chicago or something. Was that it?
Yeah.
Their series on him, and then a headline about him going to prison for 8 years. And then I saw this Men's Health article that is probably the most recognizable one that you're mentioned in, yeah.
I mean, from an article standpoint, yeah, I mean, that was... It definitely helped.
Yeah, it was a very catchy headline. Like, what if your squatter or spotter, not squatter,
when your spotter yeah.
ends up being something. So I read that whole article a couple weeks ago in the car on the way home. And I was like spitting out details. I was like, oh, did you know this? And they're like, no, we didn't know that. I was like, I didn't either. And then, you know, kept reading about it. And then I saw your name at the bottom of it and saw that you had a podcast. So, yeah, it's been a crazy little full circle situation.
Yeah, a little catch up about the last 5 years. Well, I definitely appreciate, you know, your support in listening and reading and just being interested in knowing, you know, some of the details. You know, I'm going to ask you another tough question. And you kind of touched on it before, you know, you mentioned some really nice things about Rick's wife, Shannon. But in your opinion, again, this is opinion. Do you believe she knows most of what he is up to?
Oh, that's so hard. I mean, how could she not know a lot of it, right? Like, they were together constantly. I'm sure she was with him when he was propositioning these people. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt a little bit. Maybe she didn't know the extent to which he wasn't paying people back. Maybe if he's lying to, I'm sure he lied to her. You know, like he lied to everyone else. It was pathological at that point. But, and the kids made a comment one time about him chasing her around the house, and then the policeman showed up. So I know there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that I wasn't fully aware of. So I do kind of feel sorry for her, but at the same time, how do you not know what's going on? Like, when she goes to pay me, she would always bring like a pile, and like, no exaggeration, like two armfuls full of just like cash out of the back of the bedroom, and just, you know, pick a few little bills off the top and give to me. And she's like, you know, we have car washes, we got a lot of cash flow, ha ha. I was like, yeah, it looks like it, you know. So with all those circumstances, with the cameras, you know, with her checking in on the kids constantly and like texting me constantly, I think she knew there was reason to be concerned. I think she knew that he was doing a lot of people dirty. And I know her name was on a lot of the leasing applications and things like that. So to the extent that she's, you know, I don't think she's like the type of person he is. I think she got caught in a very unfortunate situation, you know, getting romantically involved with him and then getting married and having kids with him. And then she was just kind of along for the ride. But I never pictured her or got the vibe that she was like super conniving or, you know, she wasn't out like pitching people. She was just kind of like the arm candy, you know, she was a supportive, hot wife, you know, there kind of like nodding in approval to everything he said.
That's totally fair. You know, I appreciate you giving me that opinion.
Be totally wrong, but just based on the behaviors I saw that summer, it seemed like he was very much, you know, the domineering husband. He was 15 years older. She didn't have an income. I think she was probably scared, you know, and she had three kids by him, and she was kind of stuck in the situation for a while, I would imagine. So I do feel for her on some levels, but I don't think she was totally oblivious to the goings on, for sure.
It's interesting. She reached out to Russell James Fisk after he posted in 2016 on Facebook. She called him directly, and I'm pretty sure it was without Rick knowing, and asked him to remove her name from anything he was going to post about Rick. She didn't want to be involved in it. She didn't want her name in any of it. She didn't, you know, she wasn't involved. Ironically, in 2023, actually in 2018, she reached out to my Con by Rick email alias and also asked me to remove her name from anything that I had posted that had mentioned Rick and Shannon Dugo. In 2023, she still says that she didn't know the extent and that she didn't know that Rick was ripping people off. But that's impossible because it's 2023 and we've been chasing you now going back in time, you know, since like 2014, 2015, 2016. Yeah. So it
limitations for ignorance has passed.
Right. Can you say that again? That's amazing. Yeah.
The statute of limitations for ignorance. Yeah. Like, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt for like a year or two, maybe. But like a decade later.
Yeah.
Girl, you know.
And so that's it. So it just makes me wonder just how involved, you know. I guess it'll be a question that nobody can answer but her. You know, eventually maybe she'll have to fess up or, you know, tell the truth at some point. I don't know if we'll ever know the truth to the extent, but it's just an interesting thing I like to ask people because it comes up all the time. Anytime I meet a fan, anytime I meet a friend or family member, the first thing out of their mouth after like, holy shit, is, was the wife involved? Mm. And so it's a slippery slope for me. But ironically, Shannon and I have actually had conversations. I faced her in court when she was on trial for perjury. And then after that, I mean, her and I have had conversations. And it's weird. It's this... I feel bad, and then other times I'm like, I feel like she's tricking me in a sense. So I'm just, you know, curious to know what public opinion is. You know, I mean, when your car is being repossessed or your house is being evicted, you know, you're being evicted out of your house back in 2010 and you're not asking questions as to why, it makes you wonder. But when the money's coming in and things are good, and she's going to the back room to get a bag of cash to take a couple of these big dollars because they've got this successful business that doesn't exist. That's what I find to be interesting, because in 2016, the car wash was defunct. The car wash was out of business. So what car wash did they have? So if you're married to this man and he's telling you he owns car washes, you being his wife, wouldn't you want to know if these actually existed? These are hypothetical. These are rhetorical questions, right? That we need to throw out there. But if she's coming to you with a bag of cash to pay you for your services, and she's telling you that that money came from their very successful car wash enterprises that they own, knowing full well that they don't, then it just makes you kind of question.
No, I get it. I mean, on its head, it's like red flag after red flag. And I'm not trying to give her an out or pick sides or anything like that. But I was thinking about the interview you did with one of Rick's girlfriends from the late 90s, Anna Marie.
Anna Marie, yeah, she's great, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing from her. But her talking about, like, you know, he was able to make these connections with buddies at the gym and stuff who were essentially acquaintances. But she's like, you know, I was in love with the guy and we were romantically involved. She's like, you got your blinders on. And I don't know. I think that adds another level of denial, you know, to the situation. And if you're married to them, if you have children with them, if you're depending on them for income, you probably, you know, subconsciously or consciously ignore a lot of things, or, you know, block a lot of things out. I'm not trying to give excuses, but I can see how when you're in really deep, you're trying to tell yourself, like, you know, convince yourself that there's no way, it's not that bad. I mean, it's a classic emotionally abusive situation, you know, like denial, gaslighting, which, you know, were his bread and butter. he definitely had the gift of the gab. Like he could sell a trunk full of combs to a bald guy, as my dad would say, and he would have probably had an amazing career in sales if he did it honestly. So
that's the truth. And I love these points. You know, these are all alternative views, and I do believe that there was a level of abuse that transpired in that marriage. And I have talked to other female victims that were having affairs, women that had fallen in love while he's married to Shannon, that all fall prey to him. If he was having an affair with you, he was conning you as well. And they all had that same sort of a different attachment, the romantic, the physical, the sexual, you know, and they just, it was a whole nother level of the con, which most guys, obviously, we're not in love with Rick. We may be enamored by him, but it was, I said this to Detective Bill Bang. I said, you know, the women, they were the ones that not only got taken and decimated financially, but the emotional, the mental, the physical toll that it took on them is exponentially harder than any man that's ever been conned, because we've never, at least I'll speak for me, I mean, I was not in love with Rick. I did not look up to him as anything other than some guy that was successful. So you bring up some really good points. And just something like another way to look at it. There's definitely a level of abuse. And I just think that he just gets his rocks off on not only fucking people over, but, you know, screwing over women and controlling them and taking them and their families. It's like a whole nother level of excitement for him.
It's control. And you know what's crazy? I'm sure you know all this already, but you know, Shannon was raised Mormon. You know, she seemed to have come, you know, from what she told me, from a very conservative background, you know, I never did see them drink a drop of alcohol when they were at the lake. I mean, her, obviously, she was pregnant, but I really don't think he was drinking at all. He probably, first of all, wanted to keep a sharp mind and keep all the stories straight. You know, he didn't want to get drunk and say something that's going to scare somebody off. But anyway, I think that's kind of a two-faceted, two-pronged appeal there, you know? So for him, it's probably an extra challenge to get, you know, somebody from such a conservative background, you know, that's to win over her and dupe her would be the ultimate challenge. And then for her, like, seeing this guy that was probably quite opposite of how she grew up, you know, he's got all the material things and all the all the flair, I guess, that it doesn't sound like she was used to. So I'm sure they were kind of attracted to each other, you know, an opposite attract type of way too. So
yeah, I mean, you know, like I know that, you know, she didn't steal, didn't steal in her previous marriage. I've talked to her ex-husband a few times, and right off the bat, you know, there she is in a car wash in a suburb of Illinois, and Rick's, you know, he's guarding the situation. He's standing guard and as a lookout, and she's going into a safe and stealing money, you know, right off the bat. You know, Rick had a baby in his hands, an infant, in his hands. And, you know, he's already been able to change her. It's like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of situation, right? Like,
love can do crazy things.
Yeah, love can do crazy things. So, you know, so is there anything that you want to wrap up with? Is there anything that you want to say? This is your time.
I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. I don't know. I think, you know, I'm not one of his victims, thankfully, but so I have a different perspective than a lot of people you talk to. I don't know. I really hope the kids are doing okay now. You know, none of this is their fault, and they're just put in a shitty situation. And like I said, they were really good kids. Yeah, and I think about them from time to time still. You know, I'm like, oh, so-and-so would be this old by now. And I hope they have the support that they deserve and the relationships they deserve in their lives now. Because, you know, no child deserves any of that, especially at such a young age, such a formative age. To have those as, like, your core childhood summer memories. You know, I was thinking, they're just kind of locked up in a house with a stranger. Granted, I would like to say I was fun, but I tried to keep them entertained and do fun things with them, but they didn't really have that experience of being with their family, doing fun family things, from what I could see. So I hope they get that with whoever they're with now. And I hope they have the most normal childhoods and young adulthoods they can have at this point, and that they turn out to be okay. So that's kind of where my heart lies in this whole situation. Obviously, I deeply feel for you and all the other people who he got his paws on. That's a whole different type of hurt. But yeah, and I'm so impressed with all the work you've done. It's very brave to come forward and start putting together all this. I know you spent probably thousands of hours researching and talking to people, and it's just really admirable. And I'm just really glad to see he's finally getting what he had coming to him all this time.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I'm going to give you a couple updates. So if you're looking to check in on the kids, they are now in Fairhope, Alabama. That's where Shannon moved to. She moved in December from Lake Forest. There was a lot of pressure around the northern suburbs. In the podcast success, and it was just, you know, her neighbors in that area. I had people keeping tabs. I still have people keeping tabs on activity all over the country. But that's where she ended up, Fairhope, Alabama. I think that she moved closer with her family. She changed her name back to her maiden name. Legally, to Twiley Twilly. You know, she also, I think, was kind of forced to do that. And
she called the Dugo name anymore, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't think anybody really wants to be a Dugo at this point. You know, so I'm hopeful that, you know, the kids are doing as best they can. And, I do feel bad at times about the collateral damage that this causes. So, you know, I'm not as heartless, I think, as some may point out. But anyway, I'm really thankful that you've, you know, that you reached out, Paige. It's been a delight catching up with you and talking with you. And
you know. Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much for having me. I've told these stories to... I went to a random, you know, friends and stuff over the years, but I don't think anybody quite understands like you. So
no, it's great to have some. It's a different insight, you know. Most of the people that I've talked to, they've got an axe to grind. You know, they want to hurt him. They want, you know, they want retribution. They want payback. You know, it's different to hear the ins and outs of the world that he lives in when he's, you know, I wouldn't say like you're watching, like the time you're not watching him, but at least you're giving like this interesting background about what it was like to live or work for them and the things that you saw.
Thank you all for the love and support of my podcast, To Catch a Con Man. It has been an absolute pleasure sharing this story with you, my friends, and my family, and all of the fans of this show. We are approaching 50,000 downloads and have listeners in over 100 countries. Before I sign off this last and final time, I did want to give you all some recent updates. Around March of 2024, Ricky Dugo applied for and was granted permission to start a work release program through the Illinois Department of Corrections. He is supposedly working during the daytimes and then heads back to the North Lawndale Adult Transitional Center to sleep. He served one single year of his 8-year sentence in actual prison. Remember, he was slated to serve 4 of those years as his sentence. In actuality, I am going to estimate that he will be back on the streets in less than 2 total years. Every few months, he is earning additional time off of this sentence. Kinda makes me wonder, what's the point of having these sentences when no one really serves the time? If someone told me that you could steal over $20 million from people and only have to serve a year in prison, I very well may have gone a very different career path. I kid. And what about Rick's wife, Shannon Dugo? Well, the success of this podcast and the fact that it spread like wildfire through many of the northern Illinois suburbs, like Lake Forest, where she was living, turned out to be something she was not prepared to deal with. She became reclusive and stayed indoors and out of the public spaces. In typical fashion, she stopped paying the rent, and the eviction process once again was initiated. But before cutting bait and running back to her family, she legally changed her name back to her maiden name of Shannon Twilly. Where is Shannon Dugo or Shannon Twilly now? She's living in Fairhope, Alabama, close to her parents and her siblings. She is already making waves down there. Since arriving in late December 2024, the word on the street is that she may have a new boyfriend, a man that owns a successful business in Fairhope. He may have a boat, and he looks very similar to Rick in pictures. I wanted to thank my spotters in Fairhope for keeping me informed and keeping that finger on her pulse. My only words of advice to the good people of Fairhope, Alabama, is to stay vigilant. There is a very good chance that when Rick is paroled between now and 2025, my guess is that he is going to move that way to be closer to his children. And if he does, I want you to hear my warnings, as wherever he goes, a path of financial destruction is certain to follow. He is incapable of change. Maybe that's some tough love from me to him, but I would bet a dollar that at some point in the near future, we hear about him ripping someone off again. It's just a matter of time. And before I go, I want to let you all know that I am working on taking this story to the next level. For all of those that know me or that have gotten to know me by listening to this podcast, I would hope by now you know that when I set out with a goal in mind, I do whatever I can to achieve it. Your support and words of encouragement have helped me gain the confidence that this story is worthy of something bigger than just a homegrown podcast. My ask is that you wish me luck and keep telling others to listen in. Something big is coming.